Hi, and thank you for joining me for another episode of the Kirby Method podcast. With me today, we have a wonderful guest, Holly Bertone. And Holly is a transformational mindset coach, a meditation facilitator, motivational speaker, a number one Amazon best-selling author, and host of the Gratitude Builds Fortitude podcast. Holly spent 20 years rising through the ranks of federal government service and consulting before a breast cancer and autoimmune diagnosis created an opportunity to combine her background in project management and analytics with solving a different set of problems. These days, she is known as the go-to coach and speaker who helps you discover your comeback story in the face of adversity so that you can build mental resilience and achieve greater happiness. Holly's been featured on over 250 TV and radio segments, articles, podcasts, physical stages, and online summits as an expert on gratitude and mindset, including the Dr. Nandi Show, CBS, and the Huffington Post. Hi, Holly. Thanks so much for being here.
Hi, Dr. Ellis. Thanks for having me on the show and congratulations on your relaunch.
Thank you. Yeah, it's so fun to be podcasting again. It's like getting those muscles working, but it's been one of my favorite things about my work is just because you get to meet and talk to so many interesting people. I know you have a podcast as well.
Yeah. When I first started mine, it was by accident, which sounds crazy. It is possible to launch a podcast accidentally, but yeah, we're coming up on 100 episodes and yeah, it's such a great experience. And especially with you've got such an amazing message to get out to everyone. So yeah, I'm glad you're back in the podcasting game.
Yeah, thanks. Me too. It's really fun. Yeah, and it's an honor to have you here. Could you share just a little bit about yourself and your stories? You certainly have a diverse background that's led you to where you are. And I love your message as well about, you know, our failures can actually be turned around and we can come back in the face of adversity. I think a lot of us need to hear that. So maybe just share a little bit about how you've gotten to where you are today.
Yeah, absolutely. And thank you for the opportunity to share my story because I really like to talk about where my story, the day before my story begins, because up until my 39th birthday, all I knew was success. I was an overachiever. I was the chief of staff at one of those three-letter federal government agencies they make TV shows about. I mean, it was just the best position ever. It was my dream job. It was my dream to work for this agency since I was like 16 or 17. I raced Xterra triathlons and mountain bike races. I'd stand on a podium and get a medal around my neck and traveled everywhere and drank margaritas with my girlfriends and, you know, did what I thought was and had what I thought was the absolutely perfect life because it was very successful and, you know, perfect. But on my 39th birthday was when everything changed because I was actually commuting home on the Washington DC metro and I got the phone call from my doctor and he's like, Holly, your lab results are back. And I just wanted to let you know that it's bad news. You have breast cancer, but don't worry. It's the good kind. And your next step is to get a surgeon and good luck. And that was it. And it was all the tests had been in progress. Obviously, you know, it's not like a doctor just called me out of the blue. I knew it was coming. But, and when I felt the lump, I knew just that in that place that you just don't want to go deep down, I knew. But when that phone call, oh my goodness, it was like a ton of bricks. Life literally separated. It was before cancer diagnosis and after cancer diagnosis. And by the way, there is no good kind.
Yeah. That doctor I wondered about that. Yeah.
Stupid pants for even saying that. But I went through the traditional route, surgery, chemo, radiation. And what had happened was after treatment was over and I'd go to support group and I'd see all these girls and they're out there running those 5K pink ribbon races. And I'm like, something is wrong with me because I'm not getting better. Like I'm actually getting worse. And my doctors were like, oh, you've been through a lot. You know, it's going to take a while. I'm like, no, something's wrong. A year ago, I was like standing on podiums, getting a medal around my neck and I can't get out of bed. Something is wrong. And it took about a year, but I was diagnosed with Hashimoto's thyroiditis, which is a autoimmune component, it's the sluggish hypo is the sluggish thyroid. So weight gain, chronic fatigue are two of the top symptoms. And what had happened was the doctor gave me medicine, but the medicine didn't work, which is very common with hypothyroid, with Hashimoto's, with any kind of thyroid condition. So fast forward 2017, the chronic fatigue just kept getting worse and worse and worse to the point where I was all but bedridden. Wow. And I had all of the appropriate paperwork, but the mean girls that were my managers at the time decided that they did not like the fact that I was out sick. So they illegally rescinded my FMLA and I was forced to resign.
Wow, that's awful.
It was rock bottom 1, 2, and 3.
Yeah.
With my health. And because, you know, I think that's what overachievers do. Like we don't, the wake up call at rock bottom number one with breast cancer, I didn't stop. I kept going.
Right.
I didn't realize that this is a wake up call. Like your body saying, hello, Holly, you're supposed to stop. You're supposed to slow down. You're supposed to take care of yourself. And I kept pushing myself. And then the autoimmune and the chronic fatigue and the chronic fatigue kept getting worse. And again, I didn't stop. I didn't realize this is my body screaming at me. Mm-hmm. Saying, wake up, something's wrong. So it took, and basically until my body just shut down.
Yeah.
That I realized that, okay, something's not right. So yeah. it was a wake up call. And that's when everything changed.
Wow. Wow. I thank you for sharing your story. I can see why you are a renowned public speaker. You really have a way of conveying your story that really pulled me in. And I think probably for the audience too. I'm curious. Well, I feel like this is like a frequent thing with overachievers and with really how our society is set up to measure success and worthiness of like productivity equals worthiness. And I see this a lot in my own work and in my own life, certainly to an extent, where we don't acknowledge or we don't take that time to rest when we get these little pings. It's like what we're trained to do is to just bounce back and push forward and you got this and you can do it and you can beat it and you can fight it. And like, let's get up, let's go, let's do it, let's charge. And I think sometimes those statements can be helpful, you know, maybe if they're like a toned down version of them. Certainly it's good to have encouragement and enthusiasm about our goals and our lives, but I also really see this great importance to prioritize rest and to make being able to rest okay. So I guess I'm curious, like, how is your perspective switched when everything changed for you? Because it seems like it must have if you got to the point where really your body felt like it was shutting down.
Oh, absolutely. There's two things that you touched on, and I'm very careful with my words. Mm-hmm. My brain is still on its journey of improvement. So the first one is I want to talk about value. And the second one is I want to talk about rest. So the first one, value. Everything that I attached my value to was my outcome, was my accomplishment, was my success, was having a successful career, was being married to a Green Beret, was being the stepmother, you know, eventually of an Eagle Scout, right? Like everything was attached to not just my success, but to everyone else around me. My identity was attached to them as well. And when everything came crashing down, and I did not have that value as a successful career woman, I felt like a failure. And I felt like I didn't have any value because I didn't grasp the concept that value was from within. And then barely being able to function as a wife and as a mother, that just made it worse because I'm like, well, what am I supposed to do? I have no value. I'm just here in bed at rock bottom. Like, I have no value and I'm not worthy. And it was a very, very dark place.
Yeah.
And I marinated in my own misery for quite a few months. And then I realized that this is not good. I'm still very young. I have my entire life ahead of me. And I had already done a lot of the functional medicine stuff with nutrition and all of the gluten-free and non-toxic cleaning products and non-toxic beauty products. And I had already done all the things that I thought you were supposed to do, but I didn't realized that there was more. Mm-hmm. And again, the overachiever, like I'm the A+ student, but there was more. And that more was all inside. Mm-hmm. And that was where I like to call it the clogged drain.
Yeah. That's what it feels like, I think. It's a good analogy.
And back to the rest. When I was in that deep state of chronic fatigue, there was no amount of rest that I could feel better. Mm-hmm. And I didn't, again, back to the emotional, back to the trauma, back to all of the internal gunk. And I didn't realize about the, and I'm sure, you talk about it, you've got your autonomic nervous system and your sympathetic and your parasympathetic. And I didn't realize how inflamed my body was, not just from the food or the toxins, but the emotional toxins, the trauma toxins.
Yeah.
And I was so inflamed that my body literally was stuck. Mm-hmm. It was stuck in the sympathetic stress state. Yeah. It was stuck in fight, flight, freeze, and fawn. And it wasn't until I started addressing, similar to the work that you do, started addressing this, that drain started to move and we started to unclog it. And that was when I realized that, your body says rest and I'm resting, but I'm not feeling better. There's mm-hmm. a difference. There's a difference of actually resting your body.
Yes.
Resting your body, not just resting your body.
Great distinction. I'm really glad you said that because I think this is a thing that we all really need to learn. Maybe not all of us. I think a great many of us really need to learn, like, what is actual rest? I think for me, through years of being an alcoholic and pursuing my higher education and just going and going and pushing and achieving, it's like I remember so many times what I really wanted was to rest. And I remember saying that and doing, various like spiritual things and visualizations. And it was at the end of whatever it was where I'd achieved, XYZ fantastical thing, it would be like, well, what do you get? And I was like, I get to rest. But I had no concept or idea. My body had no idea of what true rest really was. And honestly, it's taken me like years to really unravel that and to learn, like, here's what deep rest is. And now I can rest pretty easily, even, because like you, I'm not constantly in that hyper alert state that you're describing that I certainly spend a good amount of time in myself. And so I love that distinction that you made, that it's not just about maybe laying down and resting or napping. It's about this deeper level of rest where your nervous system can actually downregulate, can find some peace, doesn't have to be constantly looking for the next level of vigilance. So thank you for making that distinction.
Yeah. And I always like to equate it to when you're in this state and you have this much trauma or emotional stuff or high alert on stress or, the overachiever, it's like your body is at a concert 24/7.
Yeah.
You've got the bright lights and the loud music and the crowds of people and you come home and you can't wind down. And that's how your body is. Like it thinks it's at the concert 24/7.
Yeah.
So yeah, it is a much deeper level rest. It took years to heal. Years.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's why I'm on a mission to help others because
it's great.
Even just explaining that and we can get into, a little bit of the science if you want to, even just explaining the concept of our body when it starts to talk to us and where, if we can figure out mm-hmm. when our body is talking to us and saying, hello, hello, you need to start listening. And back to the failure and feeling like a failure, like that self-worth, that's just gasoline on the fire. Mm-hmm. Because then your confidence drops and your self-worth drops and like everything drops. And it's just like this perpetual cycle. I like to call it the suffer cycle because it just keeps going and going and going. And we need to rewire our brain. I use gratitude as the top of the food chain. I mean, it could be anything. It could be any kind of mindset modality. Mine's gratitude mm-hmm. to rewire the brain, to rewire the body, to introduce your cells to happy hormones and instead of all of the stress hormones. And what happens is that when we are in that place of rock bottom, the next time the deep isn't as deep. The width isn't as wide.
Yeah.
And we have that grit, that fortitude to say, you know what? I can do this. And we've got those skills and we can say, I'm not a failure. This may be a failure. I've got lessons I can learn in this place of rock bottom, but I'm not a failure.
Yeah.
It's just an event that happened. It doesn't define me, right? The very first Rocky movie, 1975, mm-hmm. right? The biggest comeback movie of all time. Rocky lost the fight, but he still won because of the journey that he went on, because of the person who he became, right? But he lost the fight, but he still won. No one would ever think about calling Rocky a failure. And I think that's part of our journey too, is understanding we go on this journey, we go on this path, and we have a choice. We can go down that path. We can go down the suffer cycle, or we can take a different path. And again, I use gratitude at the top of the food chain to use gratitude to say, I can be grateful for it all. Yes, there is a time and a place to experience the emotions, to be in the feels, but it's not productive to stay there forever.
Yeah. Yeah. It's, again, I really relate to a lot of what you're saying. And I feel like our work is similar just from different approaches, which I like a lot. It's really interesting to hear, to be like, yeah, right on. Cause I like, for me, when I think about it in terms of somatic experiencing, it's like, we're talking about like that, you know, having a more well-regulated nervous system and having capacity and having the felt sense to know like that we've been through something hard and we've come out of it. So it's like we train our bodies as well as our brains that we can do this again and it's okay. And it is less intense the next time. Yeah, I love that. And I like that you brought up Rocky. I think that's a really nice example. And maybe can you talk a little bit more about how you use gratitude as a mechanism for shifting out of some of the, what do you call it? The struggle cycle, the suffer cycle?
The suffer cycle, yeah.
Okay. Yeah, I like that. How does gratitude fit into that practice to uplifting us out of it?
So, and I know your audience is probably, I don't want to get into too deep with the parasympathetic and the sympathetic, but, you know, basically what happens is, when something happens to us, if it's a current event that happens or just ongoing stress or, you know, the trauma, I mean, we're all coming to the table with something. And what happens is we start to ruminate. We replay it over and over in our brains. And then we ruminate and then we call our friends and we call our other friends. And then we talk to our partner, or our spouse, or our aunt, or our sister, you know, and it's all we talk about. It's all we think about. It's the last thing we think about before we go to bed. It's the first thing we think about when we wake up in the morning. It's the monster under the bed. And what happens is the neurons in our brain that fire together wire together. And those neurons get thicker and thicker. And then what happens is that sympathetic state kicks in, your stress state, your fight, flight, freeze, or fawn. And our body responds to that stress. And what happens is things like you all of a sudden have a little bit shorter of a temper. You snap at someone when they say something that and you don't normally snap and you just start to snap. You feel you get angry. You get stuck in traffic and all of a sudden you get angry. Or, you know, you say things you just were like, oh yeah, I probably shouldn't have said that. You start to, or you go the opposite to the silent treatment. That's another mm-hmm. one. You start to fidget or bite your nails. Those are really good ones. The overachieving obviously is a big one. And even things like normal everyday things that we take to the excess. So work, food, alcohol, even hobbies, exercise, mm-hmm. right? Things that most people can do in moderation. And then we take it to the excess. We take it to the extreme to numb what's inside. And those are just, you know, oh, and people pleasing is another big one, self-sabotaging, you know, just saying yes to everything because you don't want to disappoint someone or hurt someone's feelings. And then you feel guilty if you say no. So these are all responses of our body saying, okay, hello, start paying attention. Something's not right. Can we have a conversation? Can we start to address some of this? But what happens is that it's like the frog in the boiling water. Like we just think it's normal, or we think it's our age, or we're just under a lot of stress and we dismiss it and we make excuses for it. We're like, oh, this is just how I am.
Yeah.
And then what happens is, yeah, over time, over years, again, the neurons that fire together wire together, and those neurons get thicker and thicker and thicker. And then what happens is it becomes migraines. But it's not just migraines. We start to own the migraines, and the migraines own us. Yeah. My migraines. And yeah, those migraines now own you. Or you start to have stomach issues. It's my IBS, and the IBS owns you. Or my, it becomes a disease state. You know, my fibromyalgia, my cancer, my chronic illness, my autoimmune, you know, and we, that's how we identify.
Yeah.
You know, and, or, you know, I know you, you work a lot with the sober community, you know, my alcoholism. Mm-hmm. We attach ourselves to that identity, and then it owns us.
Yeah.
And now we're looking around and we're like, we're at rock bottom. And we're like, how did we get here? You know, and we look around and we're like, wait a second, how did we get here? Our body's been talking to us the entire time.
Yeah.
The entire time. We just didn't listen.
And we're master overriders. I feel like, you know, I feel like culturally that's a big thing. We're never really trained how to listen to our bodies, how to trust our bodies. A lot of times I think we're trained the opposite, you know, logic and reason above all else. Intuition or listening to our bodies is somehow woo, or it's something mystical. And it's no, this is actually the one of the best barometers we have. So to really learn to listen and to trust, I think, is an essential skill that all of us, you know, if we didn't get it in childhood, like so many of us didn't, it's time to get it now so that, so that we can do some rewiring. So we're not like, relating to our diseases and our aches and pains and, you know, whatever else is going on, but to be able to separate our essential selves from this is something that's happening now, you know, maybe temporarily.
Yeah. And the good news is that if our brains do it one way, our brains can do it the other way.
Yeah.
So we can rewire. We can rewire. Brains that wire together, fire together. And again, my vehicle, my methodology is with gratitude. And so many people think of gratitude like, oh, it's either this list of three things. I'm supposed to make a list of three things and then I'm grateful. Or it's this like fluffy pie in the sky, you know, or we're coming up on Thanksgiving, like, oh, I'm just supposed to be thankful, grateful, blessed. And so many people dismiss it because it's so just this thing that's out there. You listen to a podcast episode or you read an article and the expert has this little blurb, like it's a list of 10 things to do. And number six is, oh, just be grateful. And it's almost dismissive the way that they say it. And you're like, okay. But what happens is that gratitude has the power to shift that cycle. What happens is that we can't be in the state of, let's say, gratitude and anxiety at the same time. And when we can introduce gratitude and we can start those neurons firing together and wiring together, we start to experience the world through the lens of gratitude rather than through the lens of all of the crap that's going on. Gratitude brings to the table the four happy hormones, the oxytocin, the serotonin, the dopamine, the endorphins. I'd rather be addicted to that.
So, yeah.
Big you time. Know, on addicted to gratitude from that perspective. And it's not a thing that you do. It's who you become. It's feeling it. Mm-hmm. And I think that's one of the biggest mistakes is that people just dismiss it. They don't understand all of the things that gratitude can do. I mean, there's thousands and thousands of scientific studies about you exercise better, you eat better, you've got better heart health, less stress, less sickness, you know, live 7 years longer, like all of these, like all the decrease in the anxiety and the depression and increase in the happiness. And again, it's like, oh, it's a scientific study. Again, we dismiss it because it's gratitude. It's not supposed to be that thing, right?
Yeah.
But no, it actually rewires your brain. And when I like to say meet gratitude where gratitude is at and let gratitude meet you where you're at. And when you can do that, when you are having that horrible day and you're like, I know I quote unquote should be grateful. You should all over yourself. Yeah. As I say the shoulds, but I don't want to be grateful. It's okay. Open a little door. Let gratitude in just a tiny little bit. It doesn't have to be this big thing. And gratitude will meet you where you're at, but you have to open the door just a little bit. And that's what I teach my students and my clients, and to open that door, to start to feel it, not just do it. And yeah. When we can make that shift, that's when gratitude starts to run the show. That's when gratitude takes over the headquarters in your brain. And that's when gratitude becomes a part of your identity and really who you are. You know, taking gratitude from the prefrontal cortex, from the doing, you know, back to the reptilian part of our brain, to the identity level of this is a part of my being. This is who I am. This has infiltrated every single cell of my body. And I am gratitude 24/7. I am walking, living, breathing, eating, loving, living gratitude.
I love that. Yeah, I feel like gratitude's a great vehicle for doing some neural rewiring. And I really like what you said about meeting gratitude where it is and having gratitude meet you where you are. Because I remember I hosted a recovery meeting for women one time, and you know, I came up with a topic and I was like, let's, you know, talk about gratitude and what happens for you when you feel gratitude. And almost everyone in the meeting was like, I don't like gratitude lists. But to the point where I was like, okay, I'm going to stop and say again what I said, because I'm not talking about making the list. Like, I'm asking you how, you know, what happens for you in your body on that felt sense level when you like take in some gratitude. And I love what you're saying, because it does really change us. But I feel like you're taking it almost one step further, where it becomes this global identification thing. And I don't think I've put gratitude in that context before, and I really like it. And it feels like there's more space around it almost, where I can just, like crack the door open. I can meet it where I am on any given day, but I can really start to have gratitude be an integral part of like just who I am as a human and as a part of my nervous system and how I approach and operate within the world. I really like that.
And I love that you said the word space, because, and this is like years before I even knew Joe Dispenza. Now I'm like a big Joe Dispenza fan, and he's really into just allowing that space in your body. But I would take my students and my clients on this journey through music. And when you're in that place where you don't feel like you have space in your body, when you're in that place of like, I feel like I'm just a clogged drain and I don't even know where to start. And where I started, and I just totally made this up, and I love the exercise, and again, I do it with my students and my clients, was I didn't know how to find this space. So I started with music, and I would listen to one of my favorite songs is Sing, Sing, Sing. It's like an old big band swing song. And I would listen to the space in between the notes. Because they always talk about like rock and roll. It's not about the rock. It's about the roll. It's music is about the space between the notes, which is what makes the music come alive. So that's what I did, was I literally would just listen to music because I couldn't meditate. My monkey mind was all over the place. So I would listen to music because I could focus on the music. I could focus on the notes, and then I would try to listen to the space in between the notes. And that started opening things up. And I was like, oh. Okay, I've got a little more space today. Right? I couldn't even meditate. Everyone's like, "Oh, meditate." No, I put on one of those apps, and then I put on the timer, and every 30 seconds I am looking at it like, "Am I done? Am I done? Am I done?" That was me meditating. And I was like, "Okay, check. I meditated today." And then I'm wondering why it didn't work.
You're like, "I'm more stressed out after trying to meditate."
Right? But the space, like that was what helped me to start to open up, you know, yeah. And I think it's a really good exercise if you find yourself in that place where I don't have the space, like I don't even know where to start. Start finding the space in between the notes to your favorite song.
I like that. And this reminds me of I taught a retreat a few months ago or back in September, and we did, you know, we do some forest bathing and some nature bathing. And we had this wonderful, amazing woman at the retreat who was, I think, in her 80s. And she was, you know, doing all the yoga and walking. But she shared something with us when we came back and we're sharing. And she said, you know, and an artist friend of mine always talked about like the blank space in the composition. And so she said, you know, I was looking at the trees and the nature, but I was also looking for the space in between everything. And she was saying how soothing she had found that and how then she could really feel the spaciousness inside her. And I love what you shared about sort of a similar approach with listening to music and listening to the space in between. And I think when we can identify spaciousness outside of ourselves, it can help us to feel where we have a little bit more space inside, you know, especially if we're really used to living in a contracted or a tight or a tense state. That can be a really helpful practice. I love that. I've never thought about that with music.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah, it's cool. I guess I was thinking about this when I was looking through your website, and I think you've already answered this, but I'm going to go ahead and ask this anyway. This idea of being stuck, I think, happens for a lot of us in different aspects of our lives, and it can lead us to rock bottom. We can try to kick and scream and punch our way out. And but there's something about it that's like this horribly uncomfortable comfortableness about being stuck. And we talked about this with the neurons, they sort of get thicker. And I always think of it too as like a well-worn path through a field. If we're walking that same path every day, it gets very well-worn and our brain and our bodies get used to it. But I don't know if you have anything else to add to that, this idea or maybe some tools to help people to start pull out of that, to like recognize, okay, this is comfortable here, but I hate it. I don't like it, but I do like it.
I like to tell it kind of a joke, kind of a story, but if you can think about like Gramps, right? Like what comes to mind when you think of Gramps? And we're going to put Gramps on the front porch, and Gramps does not have his dentures in. And Gramps is on the rocking chair and he's in his boxer shorts with his knee socks pulled up to his knees and his sandals and his little tank top. And he's on the front porch. And oh, and he's smoking a cigar. And you come up, you're like, Gramps, do you think maybe you should put your teeth in or maybe not smoke the cigar, maybe put some clothes on? You know, and Gramps is just rocking. He's like, nope, I'm good. That is your brain. Your brain is Gramps. Your brain is not going anywhere. When it finds its homeostasis, when it finds its headquarters, it's like, okay, we are setting up shop. I am Gramps. I am on that front porch and I am rocking. I am not going anywhere. And that's what keeps us stuck. That's what keeps us, you know, our brain. I always say our brain's number one job is to keep us safe and alive. It's kind of two jobs, but that's its job. And that's why we're stuck, because it doesn't want to go anywhere.
Yeah.
It just wants to stay there.
Yeah. It likes that homeostasis. And it does. It's like, okay, we're safe. We're alive here. This is okay. Let's not move. Like, this is good. We've gotten good. Why would you want to change this?
Yeah. Even if that good is not bad for you, even if that good is a really bad look.
Yeah. Yeah. And especially if we've got like a history of that, not that same type of not being good as during our formative or developmental years, it's like, no, this is what we know. This is okay. I love that. I love that story though. Great. So I guess too, when we think about gratitude, why do you think it is difficult for people to get started with it? Or what are some ways? I know we talked about the lovely meeting gratitude, where it is opening the door a little bit, but do you have any sort of practical ways people can bring gratitude into their lives more that you found particularly helpful?
Oh my goodness, Dr. Alice, I am so glad you asked that question. So are you familiar with Dr. Robert Rome's work with the DISC methodology?
No, I'm not.
The DISC personality. So it's Dr. Robert Rome, R-O-H-M, and this was years ago, he created the DISC personality. I want to say it was back in the 90s, maybe. And I'm a psychology major, so I've always been just fascinated with the brain and personalities and anything that makes us tick. So what I actually did was take his personality and kind of superimpose gratitude on top of that. So what I like to do is say, we come into this with our different personalities. We're going to be a combination of all of them, but there's going to be one that's going to be the most dominant. So just listen, think about which one applies to you. So the first one would be what I call the attitude of gratitude. So this is you if you are more of the driver, more of the dominant personality. You are the lead follower, get out of the way. You are the front of the classroom, always raising your hand with the right answer, the straight A student. this is, so you're the attitude of gratitude. And for you, part of your driving personality is competition. So I like to say, have a competition with gratitude to, you know, to every day on a scale of 1 to 10, wake up and say, okay, where am I at today? And then have a little competition with yourself. Okay, yesterday I was here, so today I'm here. You know, yesterday I was feeling this, today I'm feeling this. Can I feel a little bit better? Can I get 1% more grateful? Right. And again, you're going to want to feel it. It's not always a doing, it's a feeling, but that's just a fun way to start. And then I always like to share for those who are listening with kids, because I think it's important to introduce, because again, kids are like gratitude. They're like, oh, the eye rolls. So for your kids that are the attitudes of gratitudes, all you have to do is give them a task, give them a challenge, not a task, a challenge, and let them know they're in charge of the gratitudes at the dinner table. Don't give them any parameters. Just let them have fun, be creative, and come up with it. Let them know when they're in charge and they'll figure it out. The next up is what I call the gratitude glitterati. And these are my life of the party, the fun-loving, always fun, always happy, always wanting to be around other people, like the Susie Ray of sunshine, just always happy and glowing and having fun and life's a party, very outgoing. So for you, make gratitude fun. If you're the gratitude glitterati, just make it fun. Have fun with it. Make it a party somehow. Text with your friends back and forth, or post on social media, or walk around in nature and just have fun with it. And the same with your kids, very similar with the attitude of gratitude. Just let them have fun at the dinner table. Say, you're in charge of gratitude at the dinner table. Have fun with it. They'll figure it out. And third on the list are what I call the heart-centered gratitude. Now, these are my sweet, sweet souls. They're going to be more quiet, more centered, more soft-spoken, very deliberate, love routine, like everything the same, very quiet, very introverted. And for you, you're just going to want to feel it. Just feel it deep. Go into all of the five senses of everything that you can feel. And again, nature, going out in nature is always really good. And for the kids who are the heart-centered gratitude, at night before bedtime, you know, if they're younger, tuck them in. If they're, you know, teenagers, have them do it. But let them, you know, say, hey, let's talk about our gratitudes and go through the five senses and see how they can actually feel it. And then finally is the gratitude list makers. 25% of the population actually do like making gratitude lists. So these are going to be your more analytical and your the ones who have the spice rack alphabetized. And woe be it if someone takes a spice out and doesn't put it back in the right place, right? So you're going to be more analytical, more logical. So for you, think about gratitude on a more linear scale. So, you know, you can track it every day on a scale of 1 to 10, create an Excel spreadsheet and just track how on a scale of 1 to 10, how grateful are you? And then go back, like take notes. Right? You're the investigator. You're the scientist. Go back and take notes. What was I feeling that day? And why was I that grateful? And really kind of come at it from a curiosity perspective. You know, and then for the kids, kind of the same thing. Make a game out of it from a curiosity perspective. Well, why are you feeling gratitude? And, you know, on a scale of 1 to 10, how do you feel? And let's track our gratitudes and have fun with it that way. And this is a way that you can really, again, let gratitude meet you where you're at and meet gratitude where it's at. Because it wants to be a part of your life. And you're sitting there, you're like, oh, this gratitude thing is just, these are very tactical ways that you can let gratitude in according to your personality and to start seeing immediate results with how you can actually start making gratitude work for you.
I love that. Yeah, that was great. And I'm imagining for everyone that's listening, they really, one of those probably resonated more than some of the other ones. I know for me, it definitely did. And I'm curious,
which one are you?
The heart-centered one. Like the other ones, I was like, oh, it's kind of me. But then you said that, then you're like, just feel it. I was like, oh yeah, that's me. I'm like, I'm not making another spreadsheet. No. Like I heard that and I was like, I'm picturing my spice cabinet, which is not alphabetized. So that was fun to like pick myself out with personalities that did feel really right on. Which one are you?
When I was younger, I was very high attitude of gratitude, and I've kind of morphed just because I've had to say goodbye to a big piece of that lifestyle. And I really morphed into my secondary one, which is the gratitude list maker. Yes, my spices, I've got ones that are cooking spices and then ones that are baking spices, and they're in alphabetical order on a Lazy Susan.
I mean, I really admire that. I really do. I used to do a lot of house and pet sitting, and I would be in some of these homes that were so organized, like with the label maker everywhere. And I love being in an organized space. My place is relatively well organized, but I have not found that piece of myself that is that level of organized. Yeah. So that's okay.
And I actually have a quiz I have a quiz that they can take. We can put the link in the show notes, but
oh, yeah,
I got a quiz that is so much fun because you can take as like a minute, maybe 90 seconds, just answer a few quick questions and you get your gratitude personality and a lot of resources to get started too.
Yeah, that's great. I know you've got some other links we'll have in the show notes. Would you like to talk about any of those?
Oh, sure. So after you're finished listening to this episode, of course, my first stop would be to head over to the Gratitude Builds Fortitude podcast. And you can just start at the top and scroll down and see, you know, if there's an episode that really resonates with you. And then hit me up on Instagram. Obviously, take the quiz, but then hit me up on Instagram. I'm at holly.bertone, BERTONE. And I actually do all of my social media. So if you hit me up on Instagram, say hello on the DMs, I will get back to you and it'll actually be me and not my assistant.
Yeah, that's awesome. Thanks, Holly. And then I'd like to ask all of my guests this. My tagline for the show is come home to your body. And I like to just ask, what does that mean for you? Or how do you embody that? Or how do you bring that into your life? And I feel like this really flows with the conversation we've been having.
Yeah, this is such a great closing question, Dr. Ellis. And, you know, I think throughout my life, and we talked about it, just my value is based on success and achieving and all of the external things. And it's taking me, how old am I, 52 years to figure out that value is within and to come home to myself. And just this past year, coming up on a year now, I got divorced and shed other pieces of that identity and was, I didn't have a choice. I mean, it was staring me in the face. Like, this is a brand new identity for you to really learn who I was and the values that I stood for and learning to redefine a lot of the way that I just kind of viewed myself. And it was a chance to come home and to realize that home at that point, you know, the big, beautiful house, home is in the heart and home is within. And that's what I learned to come home to.
Yeah, that's beautiful. Thank you. Thank you so much for being here with us today.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me.
Yeah. And so thank you so much to everyone who's listening. If you enjoyed this episode, definitely check out the other episodes that we have on the relaunch. And there will be new episodes every 2 weeks, twice a month. Please like, please subscribe, and please share with a friend. You can head on over to my website at kirbymethodconsulting.com to get your free course on nervous system regulation and start learning ways that you can begin coming home to your own body. So thank you so much, and stay tuned for our next episode.